Betting on sports can be hard, but hiring Morgan & Morgan is easy. Morgan & Morgan is America's largest injury law firm. They have over 100 offices nationwide and more than 1,000 lawyers. Their fee is free unless they win. For more information, go to forthepeople.com/bestbets or dial pound law. That's pound 529 from your cell phone. That's forthepeople.com/bestbets. This is a paid advertisement.
This is the Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi on VSiN, the sports betting network.
It is the Wednesday edition of the Lombardi Line. I am Dave Ross here at Circus Sports, fabulous Las Vegas, Nevada. He is Michael Lombardi back in the East Coast. Michael, what's your temperature there in Jersey? Because it was in the 30s on my drive into work this morning.
We got you beat, David. It's like 45. It was 55 yesterday. I mean, we've had this warm spell come through the east, which I don't anticipate staying much longer. But it's been kind of nice. I haven't had to put my hand warmers on, you know. And so it's been kind of good, actually. I haven't even had to wear a coat in here in the morning. It's raining, but it's still good.
That's what I couldn't believe.
But I don't. Yeah, I mean, it's December, what is it, December 11th, right? Yeah. I don't think it's going to change. I mean, it's not staying like this. I'm sure we're going to get a cold spell because last week we were freezing. So it's all good. I mean, when I was at Indy last week getting ready to watch the Big Ten Championship, it was really cold, and then it broke, and then we got nice weather on Saturday. So that was kind of good.
This is the time of the year, obviously, in the NFL. We start looking at the weather around the NFL to see if it's going to affect some of these numbers. And we do have some injuries that are going to affect some numbers as well. The big one, we talked about it yesterday, Overshawn for the Cowboys. DeMarvion is going to be out for the entire week. Could be all of next year, too, Michael. He's going to be out for the rest of this year, of course. Every L that he's got, he tore. The ACL, the MCL, the PCL in that knee. Look, we're not doctors here, Michael, but when you hear that for a guy who had the other knee reconstructed, that was the loss of his rookie year. This was year number two. Couldn't complete this one. What do you make of that for the Cowboys? Because I know we were kidding about it with Elliot Bowman, our producer, coming in. It starts to make me think of the draft. And, you know, the Cowboys have so many needs now. Here's another one at linebacker.
Yeah, I mean, it's so classic, right? I mean, I love you, Dave. I really do. I mean, I've never seen a guy. Look, I like the Sixers, but I don't start working on the NBA draft until this early in the season, you know. So, I mean, it's amazing how they just have your attention captured, and you can get turned. I mean, you know, turning you around isn't like turning a huge ship around. I mean, you get turned around quickly. I mean, you're like a speedboat gets turned around. It's amazing how they capture you. All Jerry has to do is say, we're going to find a player, and you're all in. I mean, look, I don't see how this young man, with this, when you tear three ligaments, you're going to miss the next year. It's just impossible to do it. There's so much rehab that goes. And look as we've seen with Nick Chubb, right? We know Nick Chubb had that devastating injury a year ago, September, in Pittsburgh. And you know, he's not the same back that he was last year before the injury. We know that. Now, he may come back. I mean, like Devontae Williams from Denver.
Yeah.
He injured his knee. He's not been the same back since the injury. I think Tony Pollard hasn't been the same back that we – I mean, he's still a good player, but I don't think he's been the same back since his injury. So it takes some time.
And that's the thing with those players you're mentioning, Overshawn and Chubb and certainly Pollard as well. Explosiveness. That's what makes those guys, especially Overshawn, the way he runs from the outside linebacker position. You just hope that this other leg now is going to be fully recovered, but it could be a whole loss for Overshawn and the Cowboys in year number three. And that number, Michael, has moved significantly. We've talked about the Panthers not being a favorite in forever. Not only are they a favorite now, they were a point yesterday. Now it's up to 2.5 against those walking wounded coming in from Dallas. But really, it feels like, you know, we're kidding about me flipping on a dime, and I do. Like, had they won Monday night, Michael, I'd be talking about playoffs, right? And now you feel like this team is so deflated coming into Carolina. Is that a part of that 1.5 move, too, that it feels like all the air has been left out of the proverbial bubble here for Dallas?
Yeah, I mean, look, but I think they're still playing hard. I mean, I think that this whole notion where teams think that they don't play hard is wrong. I mean, the eye in the sky forces teams to play well because you're playing. I mean, Parsons is playing for his next contract. A lot of guys are playing for their next contract, you know, and they want to be put on tape that they're still playing hard. And when you loaf or you don't really try, that affects your market value in the next year. And so this notion that, well, they really aren't into it. I think, you know, I did the coaching show yesterday with Coach Belichick, and he made a great point. He said, if the coaches give up, the players will give up. Mm. Right? If the coaches start looking for jobs during the, you know, during the week and they're worried about getting fired, then that trickles down to the players, right? Coach Walsh talked about this all the time. And so when the coaches are invested and fully charged, and every week's a new week, like we're 0-0, and you take that approach, then the players will take that same approach. And I think that's what often happens in the NFL. Mike's fighting for his life.
Yeah.
You know, he's not giving up. I can promise you that, McCarthy. So they're going to keep playing hard, and I think that this will. Now, you know, I think to me, it is a little disrespectful. And I'm sure if I were Mike McCarthy, I'd be using, look, we're a 2.5-point dog to this team, even though we have Cooper Rush. I think the question I get asked more by anybody is, how bad must Trey Lance be if Cooper Rush is the starter?
Oh, I got those questions on X, Michael, and I keep saying, you know, they play. Like I've seen people ask me, they're like, well, why wouldn't you just try to play him? And you know the answer to this. They did play him. They played him the entire preseason to figure out. I don't know it's preseason, but they did play Trey Lance a lot, and they've had some packages for him.
A lot.
Right? And Michael, to me, Cooper Rush clearly is the better option there if we're talking about still trying to win football games. If it's really just developmental, but then it gets back to what you just talked about, right? If we're just trying to develop a guy, that means we've kind of waved the flag and we're not trying to win anymore, right? To see what we have. Maybe it's good, but we don't know. With Cooper Rush, at least it looks like a guy that knows how to run the offense. Can he run it like Dak does? Of course not. But at least you know with Cooper Rush, guys are going to be lined up where they're supposed to be. With Trey Lance, I don't know what that offense is going to look like. So you talk about it all the time. It's not coaching of one. You're not coaching one guy, Trey Lance, to figure out what he has. You're coaching the other 52 as well to still try to win. And I think that's why they're still going with Cooper Rush and should go with Cooper Rush. Right?
I think you're right. I think you just can't get into your offense. You can't get going, and it becomes a real problem.
Yeah, I don't see how you make that turn unless you really wave the white flag and say this season is done, which it might very well be. The Steelers are likely to be without George Pickens again this week. Michael, pretty good last week without him against Cleveland. I know inside the numbers, the Browns outgained Pittsburgh. But again, Russell Wilson didn't turn it over. Had some other options there at offense. This number went up to 5.5, 4.5, kind of flattened out at 5 again, where it's been most of the week. What does this offense look like without George Pickens for a second straight week?
Well, I think Mike Williams has kind of filled in a little bit for them and given them some explosiveness. He got called for an offensive pass interference penalty in the game against Cleveland, but then he came back and made a back shoulder throw. And look, I think Russell's throwing the deep ball as well as anybody, right? And I think to me, this is a game where it's every possession is going to be hard for both teams, right? You know, Pittsburgh is the best run defense in the league. The strategy in this game is going to be, what approach does Pittsburgh play when they take on a Philadelphia run game? If they stay in their base and they force Philly to have to throw the football out of base, what does that look like without Dallas Goedert? You know, they don't have the tight end inside.
Right.
So that becomes a different game, right? So if they go to nickel, can they run the ball effectively on nickel? Now, one thing that happens when you play in the AFC North, you have to play Lamar Jackson. And because Lamar is so good at movement, the Steelers' defense is conditioned to handle quarterbacks with movement. I think they're one of the best teams in the National Football League that plays moving quarterbacks. They understand how to do it. They have a really good, they have fast enough defense to do it. So I think there lies the answer. I think ultimately they've got to be able to hold up in their nickel. So they have the fast guys on the field to prevent Hurts from running around, but also to be able to get to the passer if they need to, but hold up in the run game, which is the most important when they're in their sub defense.
Yeah, 42.5, low total. I see exactly what you're seeing here, a chess match here defensively for Pittsburgh to try to slow down that run game, and maybe points will be at a premium in that one. I'm perplexed by tomorrow night's game here on Thursday night to kick off week number 15. Opens the Niners 2.5. It's still at 2.5. And yet, it's kind of like Friday Night Lights, right? Give me a running back. Who's going to run the football? Like, it looks like Isaac Garrido, he did not practice on Tuesday with a foot injury. We know they're already without Mason, without CMC, so they could be without Garrido. Patrick Taylor of Green Bay Packers fame could be the guy to carry the tote here on Thursday night. And yet the number hasn't moved, Michael. Does this say that, kind of like I'm kidding with Friday Night Lights, it doesn't matter who the running back is as long as you have the offensive line in front of you?
I think that's right. I think it's different. Maybe let me say it differently, but you're right. It doesn't matter who the running back is with Kyle Shanahan and Chris Forster as their line coach. They make every back look good, right? You know, they coach the details of the running game so damn good that it makes it really worthwhile. So I think ultimately, look, it's a challenge. I mean, they know they need him. I thought Garrido was very good in the passing game too. He made a couple. I mean, that made that great catch on the wheel route to go over there, which I thought was really difficult. So, look, the challenge is going to be blocking this Ram front, right? They've been very good. They've been feisty. You know, we know that. You know, look, if Bosa doesn't practice and Trent Williams is out with the ankle along with with his family situation, right, then it's going to be really hard. But I think those four guys probably won't play. Two offensive linemen. Now, Barsh, remember, was filling in.
Yeah.
So now they're down to their eighth lineman there. That really becomes a concern against a really good front.
That's the thing. And this number just hasn't budged. It's stayed 2.5. And again, great point about Kyle and Forster, you know, as the line coach. And it goes back to Mike, right? Back in his Denver days, it didn't matter who the running back, right? Orlandis, Gary, you get the Clinton Portises. They just kind of kept rotating running backs out. And they always seemed to have Mike Anderson. They always seemed to have like 1,000-yard seasons for those old Bronco teams. And it looks like his son, Kyle, kind of doing some similar things here with the Niners. But again, 2.5 is where it stands there, and still a high total in this one, 248.5 to kick off week number 15 in the NFL. Michael, we have a lot to get to. The great Will Hill is going to join us from Connecticut later on this hour. And Adam Burke, of course, is great too in his own right. He's going to join us in hour number 2, talk about everything going on in college football as well, plus some more line moves that we'll get to and some injuries that are associated with that. So don't go anywhere. Just getting it started. It is the Lombardi Line here on a Wednesday.
This is the Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi on VSiN, the sports betting network.
We are back on the Wednesday edition of the Lombardi Line. Dave Ross, Michael Lombardi here with you. It is always a pleasure this time every week to catch up with our guy Will Hill. Does a great job in the network. He is the host of the Should Have Bet More podcast. For me, I'd say a top three podcast name out there. You can follow Will, as I do, at Not The Will Hill on X. And again, joins us again on the Progressive Guest Line. You know, Will, we're going to talk a lot of football here.
Yeah.
But I was looking, and I don't know why, I just happened to dip into the futures market in Major League Baseball. And I noticed that to win the World Series next year, the Yankees and the Mets have the same number, plus 850. Will Hill, if I made you bet today on December 11th, 2024, at plus 850, which team in New York's got the better chance of winning the whole thing?
So happy to be on with you guys. First of all, David, do not smile at me. Wipe that smile right off your face, or I will get on a plane and fly to Vegas and wipe it off for you. Do not smile at me. I don't want to see that smile. Lombardi, what happened with this guy's football season? Why are we talking baseball?
It's a baseball show.
Well,
it's
a baseball show today. Well, we had to get him off the Cowboys. I mean, he was ready.
Exactly.
Well, he was ready to go bet the Cowboys to go to the Super Bowl if they won on Monday night. I mean, he was ready to go do that. He couldn't help himself.
I was happy to see Leon Lett back on the Cowboys field. Look, this is a devastating blow for the Yankees for as long as we can remember. Since Moses wore short pants, the Yankees have been the king. The Mets have been the little brother, second fiddle. On the field, off the field, that changed Sunday night, 10 o'clock. I mean, let's just be honest. This is one of the best players in baseball in his prime. And the Mets came in, and the Mets, they stole the Yankees' girlfriend. Let's just call it what it is. This is a changing of the guard. It's a devastating blow for the Yankees. Now, the Mets still have holes to fill. We'll see if they bring Alonso back. They still need some pitching. The Braves are still really good. The Phillies are still really good. So the Mets are no lock to even finish, you know, better than second or third in their own division. But if you're going to spend that kind of money on Soto, and this is maybe what made Soto sign with the Mets, my guess is more guys are coming. You're going to bring in some pitchers. They're going to bring back Alonso, and they're going to be loaded for the, for, you know, the next 5-8 years. We'll see how that contract ages, but that's not, you know, neither here nor there at this point. You got one of the best baseball players in his prime, and it's a devastating blow for the Yankees. I know Yankee fans right now are in a little bit of a sour grapes mode. Oh, it's too much money. We didn't want him back anyway. Nonsense. Him and Judge were a perfect pair that was so much fun to watch. And you can try to replace him with all these, you know, secondary ancillary pieces you want. There's no replacing Soto. It's a huge blow for the Yankees.
Michael, that's all I wanted to hear.
Yeah, there you go. You got your, you got what you wanted. There you go. You got what you wanted. Now, now let's go on. Let's talk Army-Navy under. I mean, 38.5 for an Army-Navy game must be the highest number we've had in forever, right, Will?
Yeah, I was looking back. 2013 is the last time they scored 39 or more points. So 2013 was the last time they would have gone over this total. Now, there is one caveat. If you've watched these teams play, they don't play like typical. It's not pure triple option both sides. They do throw it a little more than usual. But still, I'm going to go with, you know, history here. They, for both these teams, it's their Super Bowl. They come out a little tight. They know how to defend each other. There's the maximum intensity, a little tight on offense. So I'm going to play the history here and say we get another. I mean, you go through these games, and it's actually, depending on when and where you bet it, it's gone over the last 2 years, because 2 years ago it went to overtime. It was 10-10 late in the fourth quarter, but it went over because of OT. And last year it was 17-11. Some books closed last year at 26.5, 27.5, and it goes over. So you're getting another 10 points higher this year. Again, I know these teams don't play the same way they typically play, but I'm going to just stick with history here, go under 38.5. Yeah, I think it'll close lower. I'd bet it now. If you do like the under, I'd bet it now, because I think people are going to see that you know, the history of how low scoring this series is, and just, you know, continue to pound the under until game time.
And yeah, it's come down too, because you're right, Will. It was I saw as high as 40 earlier in the week, so it's already come down. You're right, it's going to keep coming down, down to 38 in some places already. Michigan, you like the Wolverines against Alabama here. And again, is this a team that's got something to play for? And obviously the Ohio State game against a team that might be mentally checked out.
That's it. That's the handicap. And I would urge everyone, the College Football Bowl Guide, Adam Burke, and everyone did a tremendous job with it. And you need it this year more than ever, because, man, the opt-outs. And what's tricky is some of these guys will opt out, but they'll play. Some of these guys opt out, but they don't play. You know, the transfer portal, it's there's a lot of moving parts. And let's be honest, when you're betting these games this early, there's some guesswork involved. I just don't know what Alabama's going to have in terms of interest in this game. I don't know if Milroe's going to play. I don't know how good the backup is. And Michigan finished the season strong. They beat Ohio State. They played well against Indiana. 11.5 for an Alabama team who's probably still stewing that they didn't make the college football playoff. To me, that's a hell of a lot of points. We'll see what happens with some of these star players for Bama. There's hints that Williams, the star receiver for Bama, might be sniffing around. So it's a whole new era in college football. You really, you know, I urge people to get the guide, because it's hard to bet it without it. But I think this is a lot of points. And man, in these bowl games in general, it's hard for me, especially early, to lay points in any of these games, because they've always been glorified exhibition games, but the players, the coaches, everyone took it seriously. Now it's it really is like preseason football.
How about the Tennessee, which isn't preseason football, Tennessee, Ohio State in the Horseshoe in Columbus, 7.5's the line here. A lot of pressure on Ryan Day. What do you like in this one?
I like Tennessee. I think this is a bad matchup for Ohio State, because their offensive line is so beat up, and there's just a bunch of guys that, you know, are hurt and aren't coming back. And Tennessee is so good defensively with their front. They've got multiple NFL guys. James Pierce is a guy who's going to be one of the top picks in the draft. They've got a couple NFL players. And since McLaughlin, the Ohio State center, got hurt 3 weeks ago before the Indiana game, they have not run the ball at all. 3.3 yards per carry against Michigan, which was a disaster of a game plan, just a disaster in general. And against Indiana, they had 4 yards per carry. And that was a game they dominated time of possession, and they got like a 40-yard run. They got one explosive to kind of juke those numbers. Other than that, man, they were just running into a brick wall. They weren't able to get any push up front. And now you got Tennessee coming to town. And I actually thought Herb Street made a really good point on that selection show, which I think still might be going on Sunday, where we sat there for a half hour waiting for them to announce the teams. he said, hey, if they go 3-and-out, if it doesn't start well early for Ohio State, what's it going to be like playing at home? That home crowd can turn, because they're annoyed. They've lost to Michigan 4 years in a row. That was an embarrassment against Michigan last time out. If it's 7-0 Tennessee earlier, if Ohio State goes 3-and-out in the first possession, the second possession, that crowd could turn. They could be getting booed in their own building. That could make for an awkward sort of atmosphere there. I'm not sure that's the biggest home field advantage as you'd think. I'm sure Tennessee fans will probably travel too. So I like Tennessee plus the points. I think they're live to pull off the upset.
You know, Will, we talked about it a lot this summer, and I believe I saw you tweet something out about this, that like, look, the playoff, it wasn't necessarily necessary to determine the best team. But now that it's here, we're going to embrace it. We're going to watch it. We're going to like it. But these other bowl games that you're referring to, and that's why you have to have the guide, motivation's going to be, that's the handicap, right? Like, I'm looking at Syracuse laying 6.5 against Washington State. I think Syracuse is going to be fired up to play in that bowl game, right? Like, is that the way you have to look at the other games that are not in the college football playoff?
Yeah, absolutely. And let's be honest, there's, you know, pluses and negatives to all this stuff, to the college football playoff. It does hurt bowl season a lot.
It does.
You know, bowl season used to be, it would be the appetizer. You'd sit there and, you know, the playoff, whether it was the BCS or the 14 playoff, that was the main entree and you have to wait for that. And meanwhile, you have your appetizers, the bowl games. Now, you don't have to wait as long. I mean, next Friday night, we have a playoff game, Indiana-Notre Dame. So it's fun that we don't have to wait that, you know, this long for meaningful football. With that being said, these bowl games are really going to get cannibalized. I thought conference title game weekend really took a hit with the juice just because, all right, you're playing an SEC title game, Georgia versus Texas. Both teams are in. Big Ten title game, Oregon, Penn State, both teams are in. It wasn't like that in past years. It was, you know, you need to win those games to go to the college football playoff. That's just not the case anymore.
All right, let's shift it to pro football. Let's go over into pro football. And, you know, they're obviously, this is every game's a playoff game. But again, let's insult Dave a little bit. You like the Panthers laying the 2.5.
That feels personal.
A little bit. Insult them a little bit. Yeah.
This feels personal. Think the Panthers, he takes it so personally, Will.
They could have won the last four or five games. If Leggett catches the ball, there was still time on the clock. But they were right there with Philly and competitive in that game. They should have beaten Tampa. Chuba Hubbard fumbles. They play, you know, basically to a draw against Kansas City. To me, Young has looked viable. They've played hard recently, and Dallas is off of a short week, a devastating game. Any pipe dream of making the playoffs went out the window when they botched that punt on Monday night. So to me, this is two teams kind of going in different directions. I think the Panthers just have, you know, more to play for and are in better form right now. So I will take the Panthers laying the 2.5. I prefer the cheap money line. Just that doesn't feel right to lay points with the Panthers. I think this is the first time in 30, 40 games they've actually been a favorite, which is crazy. But I do like the Panthers here.
Oh, we're going to have Elliot strike that from the record. Monday night, how do you back the Bears, Will Hill? How do we do that?
Yeah, my Vikings are very quiet. Like it was 11-2, but they gave up over 7 yards per play to Atlanta. They get outgained by 200 yards to Arizona. Their defense is leaking oil a little bit. I don't love the way they're playing defensively. I will take the Bears plus the points. Anytime it's 6.5, you can wait and hope we get a 7. I think you probably will get a 7 in this game. But it would be Bears or nothing for me in this game. And, man, it's a good problem to have. But Minnesota is in a very tough spot here with Darnold because he's played extremely well. They picked McCarthy, you know, pretty early, 10th overall or whatever. They've got him on the rookie contract. But I don't know how you let Darnold out the door with how well he's playing here.
I'll just say this. If you were the GM instead of Brian Cashman, you'd still have Juan Soto today, wouldn't you?
It was fun coming on with you guys. This is like a dentist appointment. Usually I like coming on here. This is like just a dentist appointment. You just sit there, you close your eyes, and you get your teeth drilled for, 10 minutes here.
I thought you handled it well, Will. I really did. I thought you did a good job of handling that. Everybody. The great Will Hill. Check him out on X at Not The Will Hill. And check out his podcast. It's fantastic. They should have bet more. Podcast. When we come back, much more to get to, including some more of those games with playoff implications. That's next here on The Lombardi Line.
This is the Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi on VSiN, the sports betting network.
We're rolling along on the Wednesday edition here of the Lombardi Line, getting ready for the beginning of week 15 tomorrow in the NFL, Michael, with the Niners hosting the Rams. We do have a lot of college football also to discuss, and who better to do that with than our managing editor here at VSiN, Adam Burke. You can follow him on X as I do, at Skating Tripods, joins us now in the Progressive Guest Line. And Adam, before we get to some of these individual games here, there is a new guide coming out, which is going to be playoff specific. Can you tell the people a little bit about that?
Yeah, good to be with you guys this morning. Tomorrow's a big day at VSiN.com. Our 2024 college football playoff betting guide will come out. So Zachary Cohen and I have previews of the first round games. We've got an overview from Matt Eumanns, where he talked to some bookmakers around town to get some of their thoughts. Also, some, you know, some of the more premier handicappers out there in the industry. But we've also got all of our picks for the college football playoff, our best bets from VSiN hosts and experts. We got a lot of stuff coming your way in this guide. As you mentioned, it is primarily focused on the college football playoff, but we will be covering all the bowl games over at VSiN.com with at least 48 hours lead time, with a preview and a prediction on every game. So in the era of the transfer portal, opt-outs, coaching changes, all these different things, it's hard to have all the information that far in advance, but we are going to give everybody at least 48 hours lead time to check out those bowl games over at VSiN.com. So now's the time, boys, to become a VSiN Pro subscriber.
You can't beat it. $79 is going to cover you all the way through May 1st. To Adam's point here again, every single bowl game, 48 hours in advance. You get betting splits. You get expert leaderboards. Again, VSiN.com/subscribe. Make sure you do so today. Let's get into the college football playoff a little bit here. And we had the great Will Hill on in hour number one. And I do get a sense, Adam, that a lot of people might be looking at Tennessee against, I don't want to say your Ohio State Buckeyes, but is there some is there some trepidation here?
Adam, he just loves to rub it in on other people. I mean, I've never seen a guy. I mean, like, he had Will Hill today rubbing it in on him. Now, you know, meanwhile, he's got the Cowboys as his lead team, and he, you know, he's taking it out shots at everybody.
I it's therapy for me, Adam. I got to poke because my team sucks. So this is the way that I get it out.
Yeah, no, I understand that. As a lifelong Browns fan, I know what that, you know, kind of defense mechanism is like. So I completely get it. Look, I mean, the Ohio State-Tennessee game, there are so many layers to it. And I understand why people like Tennessee quite a bit. I mean, Ohio State's biggest weakness is clearly on the offensive line. Well, Ohio State's biggest weakness might be Ryan Day. But on the field, their biggest weakness is the offensive line. Tennessee has a great defensive front. They're elite at stopping the run. You know, this is a team that is probably going to win the battle in the trenches against the Buckeyes. So for Ohio State, the question is, you know, all the talk, right? The players led meeting, Ryan Day acknowledging, yeah, we ran the football too much, all these different types of things. Show it to me on the field now. Throw the football around. Let Will Howard make plays. Let your guys on the outside make plays, because that's what you're going to have to do to beat this Tennessee team. I think Ohio State does win the game. Do I think that they cover? That's probably a bit of a different story. But I will say this, if Ryan Day doesn't win this game, he's gone. And honestly, the natives are going to be very restless early in this game if Ohio State doesn't look good. So it could be a very interesting dynamic, very nervous, very apprehensive at the Horseshoe when this game rolls around. But keep in mind, guys, primetime game, 8 o'clock Eastern, the boys from Knoxville might be a little bit cold in Columbus.
Oh, yeah,
that's a great point. All right, how about we got Clemson, Texas? You like Clemson in this game.
Yeah, I do like Clemson in this game. Look, I think that Quinn Ewers and Texas is very, very fortunate for the SEC schedule that they played. They did not play South Carolina. They did not play Ole Miss. They did not play the aforementioned Tennessee Volunteers. They missed maybe the best three defensive lines in the conference. And we saw Quinn Ewers really struggle against Georgia, a team that is maybe down a little bit in some areas based on all the guys they've lost in the first round over the last couple of seasons. But Georgia's still a very solid defensive front as well, and they got pressure on Quinn Ewers, and he didn't deliver good footballs when he was pressured. Completion percentage around 58.5% in those two games, 3-3 touchdown interception ratio. And he also didn't play very good against Texas A&M, a team that perennially has a good defensive line. So I think Clemson's able to harass him a little bit, make him a little bit uncomfortable. I love the way Cade Klubnik played throughout the course of the season, and I think that Dabo Swinney, after throwing Garrett Riley under the bus last year, his offensive coordinator, and then backing it up repeatedly over him, he's allowed Garrett Riley to cook this season. And they've got some dudes on the outside that can make some plays. Klubnik's very, very good and very efficient when he does decide to run. And most of them are designed runs. So I think that slows Texas's front four down a little bit. I don't know if Clemson pulls the upset, but I do think that Clemson does cover the number here. And at the very least, puts a giant scare to the Longhorns down in Austin.
You know this, and can't wait for the guide to come out tomorrow. You'll get everybody's picks here, but I'm with you. I like Clemson in this spot getting the 11 as well. I don't know that that's going to be a very popular pick out there. Let's get to Michigan, and coming off that win against Ohio State. Sorry, Adam. They're going to be playing Alabama now.
Oh, God. So, he's the worst. Adam, just so many digs. You need a lawyer. I object. I object to the line of questioning that's going on here.
You can't back Michigan, Adam, can you, after what they did to the boys there at the Shoe?
I can. Look, Michael, I'll say that this one is self-inflicted because Elliot asked me which games I liked, so I passed this one along. Okay. Again, I'll do the same thing I did yesterday when I was on VSiN Primetime and talked about this game. I'll just go take a scalding hot shower after I talk about why I'm going to back Michigan in this game. First of all, I mean, this is not the standard for Alabama Crimson Tide football. And the fact that they didn't make a 12-team playoff is probably kind of embarrassing in the eyes of the program, in the eyes of the fan base. They will not be excited to go to Tampa for this game. Meanwhile, the people from Ann Arbor are thrilled to get away from the snow and the cold and all that and head down to this one. So I fully expect Michigan to be very well represented in this game, not only in the stands, but also on the field, where I think Alabama has some opt-outs. I think they have some transfers. I don't think Jalen Milroe is going to play in this game. Even if he does, I mean, what is Alabama's mindset where they felt like they should have been a college football playoff team? They are not. And Michigan is a program that, sad to say, there's a lot of momentum right now. You beat Ohio State for a fourth straight time without Colston Loveland, without Will Johnson, with probably the worst Michigan team you've had in several years. You still beat your rival. And yeah, it cost you some money, but you brought in Bryce Underwood. So I think Michigan is kind of riding high right now, whereas Alabama, I just don't see them super invested in this game. And again, a low total of 43 with a double digit spread. So give me Michigan plus the 11.
Yeah, riding high is Seattle. They've won a couple games off the bye week. They've been really impressive. Mike McDonald has really straightened out his defense. They host Green Bay up in the Northwest. They haven't played well at home, but the Seahawks are getting 3 as a home dog.
Yeah, something that really stood out to me, I was playing craps with Mike Somich a couple of weeks ago, and we were talking about Seattle a little bit, and he goes, you know, they cut their leading tackler. So Mike McDonald has clearly put his stamp on this team, has them playing at an elite level defensively right now. And I think that's something that's going to bother Jordan Love and this Packers team a little bit. You know, Seattle, obviously, you know, getting a big game at home in primetime with the 12th man and all that, I'm sure that'll jazz up that fan base and that crowd, make it even tougher for Love and the Packers here, who I think Green Bay is a little bit overrated. I think Jordan Love specifically a little bit overrated. There are a lot of advanced metrics that kind of put him around league average in terms of success rate on dropbacks, stuff like that. I think Seattle plus the 3 is a pretty good look here, where Geno Smith's not playing at a super, super high level, but he's being responsible with the football. They've got balance. And again, I just think that defense is pretty underrated right now league-wide. So give me Seattle plus the 3 at home on Sunday Night Football.
How did the craps go with Somich? That must have been fun.
It was fun outside of the losing money part, but the time before that I played with Somich, we made some money. So okay. It kind of, you know, it evens out in this town, as they say.
There you go. 7-11, $5 yo. Let me ask you a little bit about the Texans here, because they're laying 2.5. This was 3, Adam. It's come down to 2.5. Do you like that discounted price here for DeMeco and company?
Yeah, I like Houston in this game. I mean, I've been on Miami. I've backed Miami a few times here over the last few weeks. I got very fortunate with them -5.5 last week, as anybody else did who was on that game. But, you know, Miami's stepping up in class now with a Houston team that is still playing at a very high level defensively. And the offensive line has not been good. They've certainly had their issues. CJ Stroud has not been great this season. But Miami doesn't get after the quarterback. I mean, this is a team that, they're bottom 10 in pressure percentage, according to Pro Football Reference. They're tied for the second fewest sacks in the NFL. If you give CJ Stroud time, which he hasn't had much of this season, he's going to find some of those dudes that he's got. And Joe Mixon kind of had a resurgence here over the last few weeks as well. So I think this is a tough spot for Miami, where they're finally playing another good team. We saw what they did against Green Bay, albeit in the cold, but they've beaten some bad teams here of late. I don't think that they can beat a Houston team here. So I'll take the Texans -2.5 or a cheap -3 at home.
Do you have Denver being the 7th seed? Do you think Miami, I know you're playing against them, and you're playing, and obviously, you know, we've talked about Indianapolis and Elliott's team. Do you have Denver as the 7th seed in your handicapping?
Yeah, I think it's a little bit tough here, where you only got, you know, a few games left in the regular season. You have Denver with a 2-game lead in terms of that chase for the final spot in the AFC. And guys, I think it's crazy that, I mean, the AFC playoff picture has basically been decided since what, week 12, week 13. It's just crazy, you know, the way that it's so top heavy in that conference this season, even with the wild card teams compared to the rest of the pack.
You still get the Bengals at 11-1. People love betting the Bengals to make the postseason. Not on Adam's money, not on mine either. Adam, appreciate you, man. Great stuff as always. Thanks for hopping on the Progressive Guest Line with us.
Absolutely. Look out for that college football playoff guide tomorrow.
There it is, everybody. Got to get it.
Thanks,
become
Adam.
A VSiN Pro subscriber, by the way. Again, $9.99 for that very first month. When we come back, Michael, is it news? Is it noise? That's going to wrap up the Lombardi Line next here on VSiN.